Hello, welcome to the HSJ Health Check podcast. I'm your host, Annabelle Collins, and I'm joined by Emily Townsend and Mimi Launder. This week, HSJ revealed the Care Quality Commission is soon to be the subject of a government investigation examining whether its ratings are properly rewarding care improvements and whether its new inspection regime is working. Also this week, why the NHS's ageing primary care estate could pose a threat to the National Workforce Plan. But let's talk about the CQC first. And Emily, you covered this for HSJ along with our colleague Dave West. And it appears the tables have turned and the regulator is now under the spotlight. It's a really interesting story. Perhaps we could start with, how did we first find out about this government investigation?
Yeah, so essentially this review sort of whispers about it and it sort of came out of nowhere, really. It was apparently, though, it has been discussed since last summer. So this is what we've heard, is that it's actually sort of been on the table for a little while, but it's sort of come out perhaps because there's been some discussion over the CQC and their inspection of integrated care systems. So there's been a little bit of to and fro between the Department of Health and the CQC about their new single assessment framework, which was launched in 2021, but they've been starting to implement it and they started to do a couple of pilot inspections at integrated care systems. So there's been a little bit of kind of to and fro over whether the Department of Health approves of the methodology that the CQC is carrying out for these inspections. And we've understand that that discussion is separate, but it seems to be something that, you know, the government seems to have wanted to put the CQC under the spotlight for quite a while. So essentially, it's been launched under the Cabinet Office Public Bodies Review Programme, and that was launched in 2022, and apparently that's aimed at kind of reviewing 125 public bodies. And so essentially, the Cabinet Office has asked the Department of Health to carry out this review. They have appointed Penny Dash, who is a very kind of senior NHS kind of private sector person, and you know, she's currently chair of Northwest London ICB, and she was formerly a senior McKinsey consultant. So she's been appointed to lead the review. She's a senior figure, so it's quite a serious review, and you know, it's essentially what it's going to look at is the CQC's operational effectiveness. We've been told that it will examine the CQC's new assessment framework, which I said has kind of been rumbling on for quite a few years, how it's actually working in practice now that they've started to kind of go in and inspect. And there's been a lot of inspections going on in the adult social care side of things. So one of the big things it's going to consider is whether its ratings, so its single word ratings, whether they are properly rewarding and incentivizing improvement of care. Also how it's kind of taking into account patient voices, you know, how the new inspection framework links to NHS England's own inspection framework, so its national oversight framework. So there's various, it seems like the terms are quite broad of this review, and it looks as if it's quite focused. It's something that won't be completed before the autumn, so it will go before a new government. But it sounds as if it's been in train for a little while. Obviously, around that time last summer, it was kind of when Steve Barclay AL were in charge. So, you know, possibly there's maybe something brought about by, you know, some of those advisors, but we're not sure why it's taken so long to kind of come about. But obviously it's happening now. So it's an interesting one. And I think it kind of calls into question, you know, the inspection framework that's been launched for quite a long time now.
And I suppose we've written a bit about the inspection framework in the context of some of the CQC's pulse surveys, where its workforce have kind of fed back on it, and also their kind of transformation program, and there has been this kind of level of dissatisfaction for a while. Do you think that has been a factor that has contributed to this investigation, kind of some of these ongoing bubbling concerns about it, or do you think that actually it's more about kind of why is this working?
Yeah, I think possibly. I think it's been a huge programme of work that's been in train for a long time. It kind of essentially involves a move from a sort of set schedule of inspections trust to kind of what they say is a more flexible, targeted approach, and sort of greater reliance on data, that kind of thing. So there will be sort of fewer inspectors on the ground kind of going out and doing those kind of focused things, and kind of having a more overarching look at stuff. But as you say, Annabelle, we have done a lot on this in the past, and there have been a lot of concerns among staff, and in particular the operational staff, who have been really confused, I think, by the direction of the CQC. And I think that it's been something that's been repeatedly raised as a concern. They are confused as to sort of the direction of travel and you know, how it will affect their, you know, day-to-day work. And very recently, as much as there was, it was sort of slightly improved on previous surveys, that the last kind of staff survey that came up, but there was concern about you know, sort of confidence in leaders being able to kind of deliver the same values and, you know, vision of the organisation. So I think, you know, I wouldn't say that it's purely based on the inspection framework, but I think it's probably to do with it, because, that you know, if you've been looking at it from an out, as an outsider, or, you know, Department of Health isn't an outsider, but obviously if you're looking at it from when you're in the CQC, you're very much in it, you're kind of living, breathing it every day. But I think, you know, it must have been noticed, but I think this seems to be kind of a broad, you know, how is the CQC actually working? Like, is it operationally effective? You know, there's been perhaps that, you know, the terms that we've, you know, been made aware of, there hasn't really been kind of a, oh, we're, you know, going to really kind of rip it apart and look at every single part of it and that kind of thing. But I do think that leadership is quite a big thing in terms of the CQC. There's been concern, as I just mentioned, from the staff survey about whether the leaders kind of represent the views of the organisation and the values. And, you know, it could be that that's looked at as well. But it does seem to be at the moment that the terms are quite broad. Different people will have different hopes for it. We know that trusts and sort of providers have been growing complaints that the CQC's judgments are flawed. We had a comment from NHS Confederation's Matthew Taylor, essentially said that, you know, his members have long had frustrations with the CQC's approach to regulation. They welcome the review. So I think it's an interesting one, because it seems to be that, you know, they're really kind of having this sort of focused look at the CQC, and in the context of everything that's been going on with the inspection framework and the sort of bubbling concerns over time, it will be interesting to see what it brings up.
I think the point about the ratings is also interesting, that they're not although they're not incentivizing kind of better care. But is that, do you think that could be looking at whether the CQC is too harsh with their ratings, or whether the kind of the one word rating system brought in by Jeremy Hunt, whether that maybe needs to change? Because it's quite, I think some trusts feel it's quite kind of brutal. They can work very hard to try and make improvements, and they get an orange, requires improvement. And I think, you know, we often see in the comments under stories that people are very demoralized by that and find it very frustrating.
Yeah, I think that obviously that was a big regime sort of brought in under Jeremy Hunt as Health Secretary. And I think that that is something that, as far as we understand it, that the government still wants to kind of retain those ratings. But I do think that the singular assessment framework will kind of be a little bit sort of broader in terms of its recommendations. And I think it's just looking at whether that's actually going to be effective or not, because, you know, as you've said, trusts are very concerned when they kind of, they've tried very, very hard, and then they get this one rating that stays with them often for quite a long time. And I think that's part of the issue with the kind of the assessment framework as it exists now, is that it does continue. You cannot be rated for several years, and you kind of still have this, you know, an adequate rating when actually you're doing quite well. And, you know, I think that perhaps the single assessment framework does kind of strive to change that a little bit, and tries to kind of give a bit of a broader perspective, and doesn't just say, oh, you know, but obviously they're not doing away with those ratings. So I think it'll be interesting what the Department of Health managers kind of uncover here, and see whether, you know, they're actually going to be effective, and whether that is even going to improve care. Because at the moment, you know, they're investigating whether the current inspection framework works, and also like how the new one is going to work. And it'll be interesting, because there has been this really kind of, you know, hard line and very kind of favourable perspective from the government on these single word ratings. So obviously that's something that's been heavily pushed. So it'll be interesting to see if they come back and say, actually, no, they're not working, or, you know, I doubt it, because I think they it makes sense to them, and it's obviously Jeremy Hunt is still in government, so it may be that, you know, I can't imagine them saying, oh no, we're going to do away with it, but I do think that it may be something that they look at. I think there's something else as well that hasn't really kind of been brought into the discussion yet, which I think it is meant to be looked at, which is kind of the patient side of things. So is this actually going to make things better for patients? Is it actually going to improve care? You know, how do they take into account in terms of this review, like how do you take into account how it's going to impact on patient safety? And one of the things they're looking at is how the CQC takes into account patient voices and service user voices. So that'll be interesting to see whether the CQC actually kind of does go and speak to patients. We've seen in reports that they do, but it's whether they kind of act on that and how their ratings and their inspections translate on the ground, I guess, in terms of patient care. So I think it seems to be a very broad brush. Lots of people will have different perspectives on it. And I think given that Penny Dash is doing this, she's obviously had a lot of experience at NHS and Department of Health level. She's also worked at King's Fund and Monitor, and, you know, so that she's had various positions and she's quite a very senior figure. So I think it will be a very interesting one, and obviously it will go towards the next government. So again, it could be that this is reviewed, the operational effectiveness is deemed to be good or bad, and, you know, whoever we have in government will kind of have to look at how the CQC continues going forward. So it is quite a big, it's a significant thing, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with it.
Interesting choice to lead the review, Penny Dash, as some would say that she's, you know, she's obviously is on the board of an ICB, and she isn't, I mean, there might be an argument that she isn't like truly independent, I suppose, but I wonder what your thoughts are on that, and if you have a sense of why she was selected. She obviously is, you know, has a lot of experience in lots of different areas, but I can imagine some might say, oh, well, she, you know, she's obviously kind of got a vested interest in all of this.
Yeah, and obviously I think perhaps it would be more so if she was a provider kind of chair or
CEO.
I think with Integrated Care Board, I think there's a slightly more distance, but I agree, you know, she's obviously had experience with the CQC, and I think there is this clear kind of frustration and divide between provider CEOs and the CQC. There's a lot of frustration at their judgments, and that I think there is ongoing concern and disagreement about, you know, and also they're obviously going to start inspecting integrated care systems, so who knows whether that will have any kind of conflict there. But I think it's interesting. It is an interesting choice, and I think I imagine it's probably because of her experience at the Department of Health, and kind of in terms of strategy and also on Monitor and that kind of thing. I imagine that's sort of where it's come from. But you know, she's had various roles in different industries, and you know, it's an interesting one. But I do think that it will be, she's got quite a lot of influence, so it will be interesting to see whether her recommendations that she makes, whether, you know, they'll actually have an impact.
Mimi, did you want to come in there?
Yeah, I was actually just wondering, I'm not sure if you have a sense of this, but do you know what the reaction is like from within the CQC or the leaders within the CQC?
Yeah, so I think in terms of within the CQC, I think there's been some sort of rumblings, as Annabelle was mentioning before, in terms of sort of ongoing concerns about the inspection framework. In terms of sort of the leadership, we haven't really had, you know, CQC responding to this. So I think they're kind of keeping shim a little bit, and they don't really want to sort of show their hand or anything like that. Yeah, I think because it is still at an early stage, I don't think there's been kind of anyone come out and say, I think they will probably be worried. I think it is something that I think is sort of being downplayed by a few people. But I do think that it is quite significant. And it could really be, you know, depending on what is said, this could, you know, change some of the you know, the operations of the CQC potentially. It could have sort of repercussions, particularly in this sort of political environment where we're due to get a new government. So it could be, you know, it could be sort of moved around like a bit of a political football in the NHS world, because there's this frustration. And if you've got a health secretary going into hospitals and they're saying, look, we're really concerned about the CQC and how their judgments are not working for us, and you've got an ongoing review that's kind of revealing sort of concerns within the CQC, then who knows? But I do think it's still at early stages at the moment. It doesn't seem as if there's kind of anyone sort of majorly saying, oh, this definitely needs to happen or anything like that. It seems to be that they're keeping their cards close to their chest because they don't know what this review could actually do. I think that's kind of the sense that I'm getting.
And I was just thinking this is kind of the latest in a line of kind of scrutinising reviews that have looked at the CQC, the barrister-led review, and also I think this was last year, and also the review into how they deal with whistleblowing complaints. So it's kind of like another thing about the CQC's process. And this is obviously a government review, so it's kind of like a step, not a step above that, but it's kind of... kind of another level, I suppose. And I just think, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that I wonder what's kind of go on with leadership, and maybe we shouldn't kind of speculate about that, but it does just seem like that like the latest in a line of critiques against them.
Yeah, I think it calls into question, if you've got a government review that's looking into the operational effectiveness of your organization, I do think that the leaders are, you know, would understandably be a bit concerned by it. I think they would just, at the moment, it just seems like they don't really know what it will do, and whether that, because it could be that this is quite broad and it doesn't really kind of draw any major conclusions, and it doesn't really have any kind of repercussions for it going forward. So, or it could go the other way. So at the moment, because it seems relatively vague, but obviously the main things that they are doing, the single assessment framework, the ratings, improvement of care, that which is what the CQC exists to do, are all being reviewed, and they're under quite close scrutiny from somebody who's very senior and is a government review. So as you say, it is a step up, and I think they have reason to be concerned, but obviously we haven't had any sense that they are yet. So I think it sort of remains to be seen.
I think the last thing just to say on this, Emily, is there's still kind of ongoing questions about their ICS inspection regime, correct me.
It's their ICB inspection regime, so essentially integrated care boards being looked at.
So that's been delayed. What's going on there, just as kind of a last final update?
Yeah, so it seems as if so it's been delayed. They were meant to start sort of imminently, but it looks as if there's been sort of disagreements over the methodology of the assessment. So there were two pilots done. I think it was Birmingham, Solihull and Dorset, but if I'm wrong, then I apologise. But they were done, and I think essentially the sense that we got was that the Department of Health was not necessarily very happy with how those were done in terms of whether they actually looked at the right things. There was a bit of concern over the methodology of those inspections. I think they were a little bit they were described to us as underwhelming. So I think there's a worry about that and whether they're actually going to be effective in helping ICVs to improve. So, and you've also got a lot of the context of this is that you've got NHS England also looking at reviewing ICVs and ICSs. So it seems, you know, they're looking at whether that conflicts with it. And because if you're an ICB, you've got NHS England rating you one thing and the CQC is saying you're doing this thing. So I think it's just confusing for ICBs and confusing for providers as well, where you've got two lots of scrutiny, one from NHS England, one from the CQC. So I think at the moment there's this kind of not row, but there's disagreement over how the inspections are being carried out. And I think in the context of this new review, I don't know whether this will change things, but it seems to be at the moment that it was getting close to a resolution, I believe. This review's come out, so I don't know what's happening since, but it was supposed to be in a minute and it's not now because the Department of Health are concerned that it's underwhelming.
Interesting. Thanks, Emily. I'm sure we'll be coming back to that subject soon. Let's move on to our next topic, bringing in you, Mimi. And this is a story you did about primary care estate, or kind of more specifically GP surgeries. What prompted the story? Same question to you.
So there's been absolutely or barely any data published on GP estate. Everyone kind of knows it's not fit for purpose, but mainly we're basically
we all go to the GP and we've seen.
Everyone's seen. Yeah, this won't come as a surprise to anyone, but it's one of the first times we've actually got proper official data on it. So we were leaked a some of the data in a big audit that NHS England started in 2019 called the Primary Care Data Gathering Programme. They got a lot of data for it. It includes the age of the estate, the size of the estate, the backlog maintenance, but it's been kept completely under wraps. So we've only based our impression of GP estates on surveys and, as you say, our own experiences. Mm-hmm. So we were leaked figures that basically show that one in five GP surgeries across England were built before 1948, so before the NHS was founded. And this is even worse at London, in London at two-fifths. You kind of might wonder why this matters, but in practice, this means that GPs working out of terrace houses with no room for expansion, leaky roofs, mold, some major structural issues they've talked about. And there's been so little, I think it probably is a testament to the fact there's been so little investment in the GP estate. One of the main concerns that came out of the data we saw in a note attached from NHS England was about whether this limits the big plans for workforce they've got. Mm. They want to increase GP trainees by 50%, I think, by 2031. They've recently made a big push to increase additional roles in general practice. So anyone who isn't a nurse or GP, someone like pharmacists or paramedics, they've hired tens of thousands of these, but some areas have had to turn them away because there's simply no space. Some areas have had to turn away GP trainees because there's simply no space. And this is NHS England saying quite plainly that they're concerned that unless something changes, it's going to limit their plans for the GP workforce, which is obviously a big concern given the amount of pressure on general practice to meet this incredibly rising demand, access issues everywhere, incredibly frustrated patients. And NHS England has put a lot of thought and effort into increasing access. And if it's the states that becomes one of the limits, it's pretty concerning.
Yes, it would undo other kind of good things or other kind of areas of mm-hmm. investment if they just obviously don't have space for either GPs or for patients to be seen. It's interesting that there really hasn't been much data on GP estates. I don't know whether you have a sense of why this is.
I think there are a few reasons. It's complex, much more complex than data in the rest of the NHS. There are thousands and 8,000 surgeries, more than that. So it's quite hard to collect. Different ICBs have different levels of data. Some kind of have a relatively good idea of what's going on in their estate. Some don't. As to why NHS England has kept under wraps the data it's collected since 2019, which is probably the most comprehensive data set we have on it, I'm not sure. We're trying to find out more from it, but this is a really good first peek into quite how bad the GP estate is. And a fifth pre-1948, I think, really does underline how few modern buildings there are and how hard it is to move and expand.
It's interesting. And what else is going on? You said that there was a note attached written by NHS England. Is anything being done about this? And was that note attached in 2019? It's just interesting that this work was done and now quite a few years have passed.
Yeah, I know. So I think this was information that NHS England sent round recently.
Okay.
In terms of what can be done, NHC did say in the note they were thinking about increasing online training, looking at other sites such as those run by primary care networks to deliver more training. This feels quite pitiful and compared to the size of the problem.
Yeah.
And I think it really comes down to the fact that there are very, very few existing routes for commissioners or GPs to improve their estate. Unlike much of the NHS, very little NHS capital has been invested in GP estates. So this is kind of ish works in the past because GPs and commissioners are basically reliant on two other routes. But recently, both of these routes for funding have completely dried up. And we wrote a story earlier this year on how essentially an untenable stalemate has been met because there's just no way to improve estate and commissioners are in a bit of a bind about it. So the first route that you can go for is commercial deals between GP partners and development or construction firms to build new surgeries or expand surgeries. The basis of this is the companies would get back the money through rent payments, which are funded through the NHS. But the NHS valuation of rent is so out of match with market rates that developers are increasingly saying this route isn't viable and increasingly pulling out of deals. And then the other way to get funding is through developer contributions from housing developers, so to mitigate the impact of new housing. So these are through Section 106 agreements. But GPs get really, really small sums from house builders. Neil O'Brien, when he was primary care minister, said that the sums were vanishingly small, and he was looking at ways to increase the priority of primary care when giving out funds, because schools, for example, seem to have better routes to access them. No sign of this yet. Kind of keeping an eye on it. It might be something realistically that comes out under the next government. I know Labour has talked about wanting to shift funding for infrastructure and other things away from hospitals and towards primary and community care. We've not heard much more that's firm on that, so it's one to keep an eye out.
Yes, it would be interesting. I also just wanted to ask Mimi that obviously we've got an election coming up this year, and that could well signal a change in government. From what they've said so far, have the Labour Party kind of signalled that they could be looking to invest more in primary care estate?
They have signalled it, yes. It's a little bit vague at the moment, but they've talked a lot about the importance of general practice. They originally were kind of hinting towards ripping up the existing partnership model, which kind of does link into estates, because a lot of GPs are less interested in owning premises now. They've backed away from that since, and they have talked about keeping the partnership model, or at least honouring it, and shifting more funding and resources towards primary and community care. This has been talked about for years and years and years and years, so I think it's really about waiting to see if it happens, because it's not the easiest thing to do in practice.
Yes, it would.
Was there any sense, Mimi, just about the safety consequences of some of this?
Yeah, some GPs talk about having to rearrange appointments because of just the state of the rooms, like leaks happening again and again, radiators failing, rooms being freezing cold. Obviously, if you have vulnerable patients in a waiting room, this really isn't okay. I've heard stories of patients having to move surgeries because of it. I think again, because it's in general practice, it can be quite hard to get a data-based idea of what's going on there, but absolutely no doubt. And it obviously has workforce implications as well, because it's a horrible place to work, also no space to hire, and that has implications on patient care.
All right, thanks very much, Mimi, and thanks, Emily. I think a good point to wrap up the podcast this week. But just a reminder for listeners, if you haven't subscribed, please do, and we're back every week wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.